We have to take the entire grid as it exists today, modify it, and add additional capacity.
Hi, this is Zena Harris.
And I'm Mark Raven.
Welcome to The Tie-In.
In this week's episode of The Tie-In, Mark, you took us to the conference DistribuTech and interviewed a handful of people.
I'm excited to present this episode this week, continuing to find new ways to tell a story of what's going on. And of course, you know, my background being in energy and energy technology. It's exciting to be able to share some of the insights into the world of grid power and batteries.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's like peeling an onion. You know, you think you know what there is to know. And then you go to like these conferences that are very focused on grid systems and various technologies. And you're like, oh, wow. Okay. And I bet it was fun for you, though.
Totally. It's just like with my fellow energy nerds, everybody's just so open and willing to talk about what they're doing, you know, compared to other industries that can be a little more cagey. But there's no secrets in this business. It's pure industrial might. Uh-huh. And the other thing too is, you know, people take energy and electricity for granted.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, I mean, you see sometimes, you know, poles and wire lines, maybe you see some high voltage ones, maybe there's a substation near you. But other than that, most of this infrastructure's out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing too, I always say is you can't fake it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's either on or it's off. And when it's on, people notice very little, right? Until it's off. And then people lose their shit, even when like the electricity's not on for like, you know, an hour. I mean, there were 20,000 people at this show, like huge mega exhibitors. But I did end up getting a pretty great cross-section of folks. One, Bentley, doing software for the grid and software for engineers. Span.io, they're making like a really innovative smart panel, and they've got a new product as well. Like really, really cool on sort of like power management stuff. There was Box Power. I've been following those guys for a long time. They're doing like microgrid stuff. And then, of course, Veridi. Doing the batteries, and they're doing like, they're like, they've really pulled ahead and are like the leader in mobile storage. They're the ones who bought the Moxion,
right.
You know, Moxion company out of foreclosure. And so, and bought their plant. So you'll hear some of that conversation. And everybody's just so smart and tuned in. And so, you know, I was just trying to keep up with what they're talking about.
Love that. I love that. It kind of makes, you know, it's like, you know, this like intellectual, like nerd fest. It's so great. It's like, cause that's what takes
Thank
us
you.
Forward, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And also like, again, people don't think about it, but you know, a lot of these movie studios and film and entertainment are still all based on access to power and cheap power.
Yeah.
You know, part of the conversations we had many years ago was like, oh, well, how are these studios going to get power? Because they're put up in like a ramshackle warehouse that wasn't intended to have big studio power requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is like the dilemma between, you know, purpose built and, you know, filming wherever you can get space, right? And that's the big question, is power, and everybody needs it. And then it goes from, you know, can we plug it in, to like, how can it be mobile? Because we're all over the place, we're all over the city and all of that, and we need it now. So that's, you know, mobile power was, you know, top of mind back in the day when we were thinking about how to do this differently, right? So
yeah. And also, I mean, a lot of studios were just running big diesel generators behind the studio, in the studio lot.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was a thing. And then all of a sudden, everybody was like, oh, well, how are we going to get EVs? How are we going to charge EVs? So we can't use EVs. And they're like, okay, let's figure out how to get charging into the studios. And they're like, well, we don't own the building. And
I mean, layer upon layer. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm telling you, Mark, like that whole running diesel generators on the studio lot is not like years ago kind of thing. That was like
still last year,
because we just got off a show where that happened and we were like trying to figure that out. But Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So yes, I hope people enjoy that. And yeah, and then you're going to be, I guess, not South by Southwest. That's coming up at some point.
Yeah, a little teaser coming up in March. I'll be at South by Southwest. I'm a mentor again this year, so that's pretty fun. Anyway, good episode.
Yeah.
Good, fun interviews from the field.
Yeah, it's short and sweet. Thanks. Short and sweet. Hopefully people listen to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you guys soon.
Hi, I'm Brad Johnson, Director of Electric Utilities with Bentley Systems. We provide infrastructure software around the world, helping solve the challenges that infrastructure owners, operators, engineering firms are facing, especially as more and more pressure is put on infrastructure, whether it's digital twins, design software, assessing the built environment, natural environment. We provide those technologies to professionals everywhere.
Right. So you guys are providing end-to-end solutions at anywhere that the grid is happening. Is that true?
Yeah, it sounds pretty lofty, but we really do. I mean, electricity works largely the same way. Each country that we work in is at a different stage in their evolution of their grids. You know, whether it's in India, where they have a truly world-class transmission system, or we look at some of the really exciting distribution system advancements happening here in the U.S., we offer solutions that help primarily in that physical engineering side or assessing what's out there today. So, yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of talk right now about data centers and AI and almost like the grid breaking right now. This is a good opportunity to get in there.
Yeah. You know, I've been having conversations about that. And I kind of mentioned that there's more stress on the grid than there has been before. We're at a point where we have about 140 years worth of work to do in the next sever.
Yeah.
It's not that we have to expand the grid X percent or X times over. We have to take the entire grid as it exists today, modify it, and add additional capacity. So that's why I think like 140 years of work to do in 7 years is a bit more meaningful. I think does a better job of capturing what's actually before us and why it's so urgent that professionals in our industry adopt new technologies to get these problems solved.
Totally. And I heard a friend say, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of private equity guys walking around here right now. And I was like, well, that's the first time in 100 years that's really happened. But it's funny. It's a funny time for the grid, right? After 100 years of like just keeping the lights on and keeping things moving steady.
I think it underscores just how central, reliable, affordable, and resilient energy delivery is to every facet of our lives these days. You know, people who previously hadn't been interested in utilities before becoming interested is a sign that they understand that, you know, this part of the supply chain relies on affordable energy for it to remain sustainable and even as a going concern. Data centers are obviously putting a big finger on the scale as it relates to investment. But even if the data center development were to ever slow down, I think we would see that We're really still just catching up on a backlog of work that had to take place anyway. And as we electrified more and more of our lives, whether it's heating or cooking or manufacturing or what have you, getting away from natural gas or other fossil fuels, the importance for how reliable the grid is, the amount that there's sufficient capacity and margin above that for elasticity and demand, I think we're just going to see more and more interest in helping get these problems solved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is kind of where AI and software come in. We heard of a keynote this morning with Dex. It was like, for every engineer now at a software company, they're doing the job of 10 engineers. Everybody's using AI. Yeah. And is that similar in the grid software world?
Well, I was just having a conversation with somebody about that topic. And we were talking about how in the industry, it's important that it's not just AI for AI's sake. There are plenty of examples of AI for AI's sake, not just in the utility space, but I think in just about every industry. The things that get me excited about what we're doing at Bentley are we're doing AI for engineering reasons. We're helping to accelerate the pace that work gets done by engineers so that they don't feel overburdened by the stack of plans that are sitting at their desk waiting to be completed. I mean, think about it, that's actually a quality of life improvement. And we're not talking about replacing engineers. We're talking about dealing with the fact that we just don't have enough engineers to get that 140 years of work done. So unless we're going to grind them all down because they're so overloaded, we have to use technology. We have to use practical applications of AI. For example, helping facilitate work that follows the sun, tearing down the language barrier on these cross-functional teams where the substation design might be have hands on it in four different countries speaking four different languages. These are those use cases that we're addressing, and I think are the kind of ones that start to build industry confidence that it's not just all AI for AI's sake.
Yeah, that's amazing. Such an exciting world. Where can folks find out a little bit more about Bentley?
Find us at Bentley on socials. You can find me out there. You can find us online or LinkedIn, and you can find us in your community, likely a utility near you. But super excited for our participation around the world. I'll be in Sydney in a couple months sharing stories with our users there. And yeah, find us put anywhere.
Hi, I'm Rithi Chin with Box Power. I'm Vice President of Technology. My teams do product and product services, but we're also a full EPC company. On the product and product services side, we have an array of products from really complex microgrid control systems and grid interface systems that can productize and make microgrid simple to services such as field commissioning, field integration, O&M services. We'll maintain microgrid systems for our customers for the duration of the life of the microgrid operation.
Right, and I can see photos behind. You guys look like you're focused on truly off-grid microgrid solutions. Is that still a fact today, or is that was how you guys started?
That's more of how we started. I think that's where we really learned how to do really complex microgrid controls, make sure we have really reliable systems. And so we take that, and now we can, you know, do grid-connected systems that seamlessly island and reconnect seamlessly as well. So basically, even though we're connecting and disconnecting, nobody knows the difference.
Right. Right. So right now we're at a big grid conference. How do you guys interface with the grid at large, and where do you guys see microgrids playing a role in the current power grid?
Yeah, I think we're very different than most microgrid companies. So our focus is utility grade microgrid products and systems. Most of our customers are utilities ourselves. We're building utility assets that are microgrid systems to serve their customer because it's the most cost effective, the most reliable, and the fastest to deploy.
Right. So you're predominantly then behind the meter or in front of the meter? Like you're working with the utility or with the customer sort of in his power?
Predominantly on the utility side, we're in front of the meter. If we're working CNI for the customer, we're behind the meter. But we can do both, which is sort of weird. So we can do both behind the meter and in front of the meter.
Right. And are you selling your hardware, or do you work with them as a micro utility?
We do both. So we have an EPC business that will do full turnkey microgrid systems for you. We'll design it, we'll procure it, we'll build it, we'll commission it and turn it over. We have a full product suite that we could either use on their EPC side, or we can sell it direct to customers that want to use our products. One of the key differences is we started off with a containerized microgrid system.
Yeah.
And so that's a microgrid in the box, right?
Yeah.
Generator, battery, solar, all in one box. We now took that and made metaphysical boxes for our microgrids. So we have small or mini, medium, and large microgrid systems.
Yeah.
Even the large, many like 8 megawatt hour microgrid system, 5 megawatts of PV, those are still standardized products that we've used because we've integrated, we've tested it, we've pre-engineered it. And so it's not first of its kind. It's things we do all the time. It's just how many do you need?
So it's modular, sort of, main, you sort of standardize on the product and the product itself.
Yeah.
And it's just modular.
Yeah. And we de-risk everything because we've already pre-integrated, pre-tested, pre-engineered it, which a lot of times is you work with someone that may not know all these nuances, or even if they do, they find out these issues in the field.
Yeah.
We've worked through all of that so that, you know, we know everything about it. So when we go to deploy them, it's not, oh, all of these issues end up at the end that increases cost or increases time to power. We figure it out so it's more, less variation and more reliable in terms of when we can deploy power.
Right. What's the most exciting project that you guys have installed a microgrid on?
That's a good question. For me specifically, I started off working at Chevron where we did grid systems around the world. And so we have like 200 megawatt sites in the jungles of Indonesia, right? Things like that. And so what keeps me, I guess, motivated is what is the microgrid being used for?
Yeah.
And so I think we're working with a project with NVE. That is going to power like I think over 200 homes
yeah.
in the mountains. And so that's really interesting to me because without that, you know, they have potential like reliability issues during the fire season because the power lines potentially could cause a fire, right?
And lots of talk about data centers, speed to power, you know, everybody wants gigawatts of power. Where do you guys fit in all that?
So that's interesting. I think a lot of people are chasing that. We're not a gigawatt scaler today. Maybe next, maybe tomorrow, but not today, right? But if you're in the, let's say, 20 megawatts and down, we can definitely help. Wow. I think one of the key things is because of our close connections with the utility, our understanding of what they require, if we can do flexible interconnections, we could do a phased approach where we can get you power sooner. Maybe it's not full power, but we can scale up as your data center scaling. So I think there is a place where we can help data centers, but I think it's true for basically everybody. Everybody needs power as soon as possible, and it's hard. There's a scarcity in terms of available power today.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. So where can people find out about Box Power?
Boxpower.io is our website. Please go there.
Hey, Troy Daniels here with Span, Technical Account Manager. Here we're at DTEC, talking about our smart panel technology, specifically looking here at the Span Edge.
Very cool. All right, what does the Span Edge do?
Yeah, so Span Edge is probably our newest, most exciting product. Span Edge is actually you can look at it as a two-part product. It is a meter intercept device where we can actually capture the service rate from the meter and where we can actually hang the Span panel. So just like our traditional residential panels, we have all the intelligence built in where we can monitor, we can control individual circuits. Well, what this product is so unique is now we can allow for much easier installation, very utility focused here, where we're actually able to intercept from the meter and still add in the Span panel. Think of it as a parallel service. So, you know, from there, there's just a ton of opportunity to run different programs from the utility side, maybe demand response programs, and really give the utility a fleet level view of everything that is in these panels here.
And right now, they don't have that view.
No, I mean,
unless it's a smart, I mean, if what's a smart meter does something similar?
A smart meter, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, the AMI system and looking at where smart meters are right now, tons of growth, obviously. But when we're talking about circuit level data,
yeah,
we're really unparalleled there. And think about it like this. When we're talking about the fleet view, we're often talking about minute interval data on each individual circuit with each individual circuit identified. So I think
that would be like your car, your stove, everything else, your hot water tank. I mean, everything would just be all on that. And then the utility can kind of control that.
Yeah. Think about most likely large loads in here, right? You might still have a panel downstream. You might still have your normal home service.
Yeah, that thing downstream.
Yeah, that'd be great. I love that. I would hope you'd have a Span downstream as well. But when you're talking about, you know, the larger loads in here, like an EVSC, electric heat pump,
right?
These are loads that are, you know, can cause service upgrades. So we can avoid that service upgrade. We can also help the utility avoid costly upgrades on their infrastructure side by enabling them to use the power control system that is Span. It's an energy management system. It's listed to both those things. So it can control those loads. And basically, we can look at it as we can control service across a larger fleet now,
yeah,
and keep that service size where we want it to be.
Right. So like air conditioning, for example, on a really hot day, would that be tied into something like this?
Yeah, it could be. I think, you know, the cool thing here is I love the idea of air conditioning. So we think about, you know, thermostat programs have been something for so long, and that tends to be the only thing the utility company can say, hey, we want control of this for our own purposes when spikes are high.
Yeah.
And that tends to affect a customer's comfort. They notice that oftentimes. Sure, we can do that here, but what we can also do is something like an EVSC or maybe a resistive water heater. That's something customers most likely not going to notice. So by identifying the loads and even letting the homeowner have some flexibility of their priorities, we're just worried about that bottom line number. We say, hey, we need to reduce that each panel in the fleet by 10 amps. Let the customer decide which load is actually being controlled instead of just saying it's always your air conditioning.
Yeah.
Tons of flexibility there.
That's amazing. Yeah. And so is your strategy that you're going into specific regions and then trying to get all the homes in that region on board, or are you putting these anywhere in the US and just starting like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think adoption on this product is definitely going to, I would argue, is still going to be kind of coming down to the utility.
Right.
They're the biggest partner here that we can think about is really going to be able to implement these at scale to make an impact.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we've got our residential side, something that a customer would purchase.
Yeah.
And there's still the same benefits. You still have the service upgrade avoidance, but that's really more the customer knowing that they need that. Whereas this is so focused in on how do we make bigger change on a bigger infrastructure and avoid large scale infrastructure upgrades.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And how do electricians like these things? Because, I mean, they're not quite your standard panel. Do they need training on it? Are they resistant to like this kind of new tech?
Oh, I'm biased, but I'll say this. I think truly, well, first and foremost, the Gen 3 platform, which is every panel you see here today is our newest Gen 3 platform, much more user-friendly to the electricians themselves, which for me is, you know, close to my heart. Like, I've been in the field myself. Gen 2, I would argue, was a little bit more technology heavy, where now we've taken the same technology, upgraded it, but made this more of a user-friendly. There's more space, there's better knockouts. The commissioning aspect of it might be scary to some folks. Yeah. It's really intuitive, it's really easy, it's really guiding. When we're talking about things like firm service rating, which is our hey, we're gonna virtually set a service rating and it's not gonna go above that panel. That's just the figure that they put into the panel. It guides them right through that. The edge is extremely unique for installers because we think about, again, you might have a meter tech that actually comes out and installs this part of the device here.
Yeah.
So meter tech might pull off here, put the whip on, connect it, and really they could even hang this box here. No loads inside of it. No electrician needed at that point. The electrician would be somebody that would come afterwards and actually start putting in loads. Yeah. Think about it the same way as if you got a heat pump installed any other time. They know where they're going to put it now because they've got all this space and all this service available here.
Yeah. Can you put a battery under that too? Like, is this where the battery would come in?
You can put a battery here. So you would arguably land on, I almost went to the top. Definitely to the bottom, opposite end of the bus bar. This is where you probably land your battery, your solar. So you could have those assets landed here as well. And, you know, we see that all the time where a solar system or a battery might trigger a service upgrade. This could help avoid that.
So what's next for Span? I've been following you guys for a long time. You guys have had some great success so far as being the industry leader. I'm sure you got lots of folks nipping at your tail. But what's next? You're looking at the utility space. You're at a big, huge, crazy conference here with big old utility power guys.
And little old Span. No, I mean, it's a good question. I think markets are changing. So traditionally, you know, we've always kind of stood in the solar battery space, the small residential electrical. And I don't think that's ever going to change. And I love that space. But I think we're also growing into new spaces. New construction, home building, huge space for us right now.
Yeah.
Seeing a lot of growth there as far as, avoiding larger services. And these home builders really seeing the value in that.
Yeah.
I think obviously we're going towards the utility side too.
Hopefully the utilities see the value in that.
Utilities are seeing. And you know, it's an easy conversation, I find. The utilities really see that value and it makes sense to them. So they're already seeing that when we can save them money. You know, we're going to see a lot of growth with our great partners. You know, we're here at Landis and Booth here as one of our biggest partners. They are tenured in the industry. They know a lot of people, and it's exciting to see the growth and the partnerships. I think we're going to have a lot of exciting partnerships you're going to see throughout the year that will continue to grow the business and kind of bring Span to its full potential as a product.
And it's still early days, too. So it's
The technology's there.
Yeah.
Now the adoption is coming, and it's really exciting. I think we're going to see just a ton of use cases, especially in the utility space, when they're pulling so much data and using it for such advanced situations where they can implement different programs and save a lot of money on infrastructure and hopefully really provide control to the customer as well.
All right. Love it. Where can people find out more about Span?
You can check out our website, span.io. Feel free to contact us there as well. Any questions, purchases, technical questions. We actually even have a Span Tech portal if you're an installer.
Yeah.
It's got a suite of videos. They're great training resources. Tons of info up there.
All right. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Hal Corin, head of development at Veriti, where I focus on strategy, new markets, customer journey, and I run our IoT grid communications division. Veriti is special because we figured out a way to make batteries with high density safe to go in and around buildings by solving for propagation of thermal runaway. Thermal runaway is a short circuit that occurs in battery chemistries that are energy dense, which makes them really dangerous. It's a statistical inevitability, even with the best cells in the world. And so by coming up with this architecture that can stop that, you end up being able to make batteries go where they never have before, where they are most relevant to grid and can monetize and kind of solve all the problems and challenges within energy transition. Lower costs for users, utilities, defer infrastructure upgrades, and have an opportunity to create equity in the system, even things like firming renewables and making solar more valuable. So it's an exciting time to be at Veriti and to be doing what we're doing as a domestic manufacturer of battery storage.
Yeah, you guys are making some pretty big waves here in the last number of years. As we can see here, right here, we've got your mobile unit. Did you guys start off in mobile power or was it the inverse? Because I know that you guys have some, you'll tell us about your batteries that are in for buildings.
Yeah, interestingly, we started off by electrifying heavy equipment, like think, small excavators and even big excavators, but, got into mobile equipment early and saw a lot of advantages and market capability there.
Yeah. But also that requires a certain level of safety and certification that you otherwise wouldn't necessarily need.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to be in and around crowds of people and equipment, safety is of the utmost. In addition, of course, to what the use case is and how you're driving benefit for the buyer and the customer.
Right. And so you guys have been expanding. So we all know the Moxion story. And if you don't know, folks, go check it out. So you guys picked up some of their assets, IP, and also their manufacturing facility.
Yeah. So we have a portion of their facility in Richmond, which is right off of the port. It's an awesome place. And it's a parallel because that was the old Ford plant, which was actually where Rosie the Riveter worked. And our headquarters in Buffalo, New York is an old GM facility. So we're keeping it in the theme of reinvesting in American infrastructure and revitalizing neighborhoods, which is a privilege.
I love that. So before we jump onto something else here, you just showed me a photo of your sort of in like confined spaces in building system.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What's special about that? Because you can't just throw any old battery pack inside a building.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it's rare to see one over 20 kilowatt hours inside a building. And so that system was 3.75 megawatt hours. So 75 of these packs that you see next to me spread around the basement of a multifamily building. And so the purpose of that facility was really to be grid interactive and to control dispatch, to meet grid need when it's there, and also to provide resiliency for the owner and occupants of that building. So, they can drive a lot of revenue and in addition, tell a really great sustainability story and lower costs to their residents, which is great.
Now, remember many, many years ago, there was a company called like Advanced Microgrid Solutions or something like that. Anyways, they had a model where they're going inside buildings and so on, but it never really went anywhere. They're too early.
Yeah.
But it sounds like now's the time. I mean, you're able to do it safely and there's the incentive models.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I would say there's sort of this angle of customer and market readiness, which certainly includes, authorities having jurisdiction and fire departments.
Yeah.
But all of those groups are right to be scared about what the dangers that batteries present. But, our technology is in the right place. And for all of the challenges that we're looking into with grid modernization, growth, electrification, AI data center booming, like, you know, people really understand now that batteries are the Rosetta Stone of how you solve for all of these challenges.
Good segue. So we are at a grid power show, lots of talk. I mean, 100 years of stable and, you know, keep the lights on, don't mess with the system.
Yeah.
Everything's up in the air right now.
Yeah.
You're here at the show. There aren't that many battery folks here at the show. How are you interacting with the grid? And what does that take? Because that's a different game than just pulling a battery around.
Yeah, what's really important for us, I would say for anybody, is future-proofing and kind of being ready. And so for us, that means having a very modular build. You know, an owner is not going to want to overextend, especially on capital expenditure. So buy batteries you need today and you can foresee a return on, and get more later if you need more. In terms of, you know, grid interactivity and sort of the value streams that we monetize, you know, what I can say confidently is that in 5 years, rates and tariffs are going to look a lot different. Streams to monetize are also going to look a lot different. These things are really growing in ways that will be largely influenced by types of load in areas, types of generation in areas, and infrastructure challenges that are local. And so the shape of electrification of heat and electrification of transport will have huge impacts on this as they differ. And so in that sense, you know, our trick on interacting with grids is really boiling everything down to math, right? It's just algorithms. And for any customer, they're solving for a known amount of things, whether those are revenue streams, peak shaving, time of use arbitrage, demand response, frequency regulation, all these different things and more. But, you know, things like optimizing solar fit in there, sustainability, whatever that might mean to the owner, or resiliency, whatever that definition might mean for the owner. These are all things that are in a value stack of what you would do with a battery if you have it. And so if you're scheduling that with the right intelligence and you know what to optimize and what's important to your customer, you know, that's what you need to come ready to play. And so for us, you know, we're not taking our foot off the gas pedal. You really need to be ready to evolve with the customer and the rates and the challenges and opportunities that present themselves.
And I mean, but you guys made your name with, I could see the Sunbelt logo on the unit.
Yeah.
I see your units all over at Burning Man. And also they're being paired with diesel generators, so you're hybridizing a lot.
Absolutely.
How important is that market right now to you? Because we've all been in that market for a long time, but it seems like it's just kicking off now. People are like, oh, I can pair this with a diesel generator.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about where you guys are at with that market there.
You know, it's a phenomenal market, and Sunbelt is a great customer. They take us plenty of places, and in terms of kind of earning our gray hairs and stripes for our product and really like testing them to the nth degree, we've been in the Great North in Canada, and we've been, you know, in extended deployments in deserts in the Southwest. And so very relevant because for all the things we just spoke of, you know, grid transition and evolution, the grid's becoming less reliable. And so folks are becoming more dependent and interested in microgrids.
Yeah.
While also, you know, looking at the stacking up operational costs of operating in periods of significant grid rate increases. So folks are looking how to save money and become more resilient and independent from grids. And so in that way, a facility that has diesel generator or, you know, you would be considering remote operations, a battery only makes sense, right? So just like any combustion engine, it likes to run at 100%. That's where it's most efficient. And so the trick is by hybridizing the system, doing a generator plus a battery or groups of generators plus groups of batteries, you always utilize them when they're most efficient. You get the best gas mileage. But what that translates to, better savings, quieter run times, less run time on the diesel. It only runs when it's most happy. So you extend the life of that equipment. You decrease the cost to maintain it. And, beyond that, what our systems bring to sort of dumb diesel systems or other systems used remotely, our communications gives us the ability to control it remotely, visualize it, And we've done this on some pretty like basic old equipment. And so sort of giving folks the ability to see what's happening and create a triage plan if they're solving for, you know, a disaster or some kind of, you know, uptime goals, it's important.
And I mean, construction seems to be a no-brainer as well. I mean, literally diesel generators running with no load on them on construction sites all over North America.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, charge up the battery, run it quietly, and don't piss off your neighbors. It's a good combination.
Yeah, I love it. Is there anything we should know about IAV going forward? What do you guys got planned for 2026?
You know, we ended 25 with a few big bangs. We've got a lot of products shipping out to some key sites. You know, Fortune 100, we're looking to do a lot more indoors. And, you know, really double down on being an American-based manufacturer, still eligible for ITC and at 40%. So excited about a lot of partnerships that we have going. And, please stay tuned.
Love that. And where can folks find out about Veriti?
So check out our website, veritiparente.com. Please feel free to get in touch with me or here at the conference. We're here with Mark Hagedorn. We're here with Mohammed Hoda, and find any of us on LinkedIn. Please follow us on LinkedIn and get in touch.
Our designer is Aaliyah Kane. Music is by Peter Chapman. Social media is by Sharon Ewan. Our editor and producer is Rachel Werbel.